Good morning, everyone. Last week we embarked on kingdoms and godheads of the little mind. I think we read through first section and then we went back to have a look at it in more detail, and we reached page 241, line 117. So we would start again now on page 241 at line 218. A master magician of measure and device. We are in the kingdoms, godheads of the little mind. And Sri Aurobindo will show us three levels of the little mind and then two higher levels. So now we can go back to the kingdoms and godheads of the little mind, page 241, line 118. A master magician of measure and device has made an eternity from recurring form, and to the wandering spectator thought assigned a seat on the inconscient stage. On earth, by the will of the arch intelligence, a bodiless energy put on matter's role. Proton and photon served the imager eye to change things subtle into a physical world, and the invisible appeared as shape, and the impalpable was felt as mass. Magic of percept joined with concepts art and lent to each object an interpreting name. Idea was disguised in a body's artistry, and by a strange atomic law's mystique, a frame was made in which the sense could put its symbol picture of the universe. Sri Aurobindo has already told us several times that this universe has been made by a magician, and he's hinted that that magician is connected with power of mind. Here he makes it quite clear that matter, what we experience as matter in the solid reality, is not a product of mind, but the producer, not the product of matter, but the product of consciousness, of mind. And he explains here how it would. We saw that world of subtle matter where things, templates are created for our material world. And here he's explaining how this master magician of measure and device has made an eternity from recurring forms, forms that come and dissolve and come again. And he's given the spectator thought, which wanders about in the universe, as in an Elizabethan theatre, it has given to that spectator thought a seat on the stage. And the old Elizabethan theatres, the privileged spectators got stools to sit on the stage. They didn't have to stand in the courtyard or wherever the play was being made. So he says that spectator, that watcher, watching consciousness, which we sometimes call Purusha, has been given a seat on the stage of the material universe. So on Earth, on our planet, by the will of that arch intelligence, that super consciousness, a bodiless energy, a shapeless, formless energy, has put on a role of matter. And that matter is made out of protons, and the light is made out of photons. No? These serve the eye, which is watching and seeing all this, to change subtle things into a physical world, so that things that were invisible appear concretely as shape, and things that couldn't even be touched are now, we can feel them as mass. This is done by a kind of magic. Magic of percept. That means the consciousness perceives something. Perception joins with concept art, the art of conceiving thing, or forming an idea thing. And in this way, it lends to each solid object a meaning and an interpreting name. So we say seat, table, blah, we give each other name, idea, this what is just an idea, a supreme idea on the highest level, disguises itself in a body that's made with a certain artistry, beauty and harmony. And this is done somehow through this law of the atom, these tiny little particles. The physicists tell us that all this is atoms. But it's only when the atoms reach a certain density that we feel it as matter. Otherwise, even these atoms are 99% space. Our percept and our concept receives them. We experience material objects. So in this way, a framework was made in which the sense of touch and sight, taste and smell, could put into this frame the symbol picture of the universe.
This
Would you like to take this seat? Whatever is easier for you. No, please go ahead. We don't think of our eyes as creating images. We think we're just seeing them, that the images, the things are there and we see them. But he says here, it's the perception joined with the conception, with the interpretation, that makes what we see.
I'm thinking here, enjoying the fact that, or the possibility that it's deliberate, that the mind and the eye are working together and we are able to detect a form in this space so that we engage in this material world, but also understand the possibility for change or application somehow.
The consciousness can change things.
Yes. And we're made that way.
Sorry?
We are made that way. Yes. But it's deliberate. There's a difference.
There's a purpose, intention behind it.
Right. Mm-hmm. I have a question about these recurring forms. It's just a simple matter of comprehending. He's making an eternity of forms that keep repeating. So we have a sense of eternity because this form is constant. Can you help me with that?
Well, often we don't usually have a sense of eternity, do we?
No. That something will be permanent, like a tree, but we ultimately know it isn't, or that, what does it mean?
He doesn't say made eternity. Eternity exists, but this process creates a manifestation of eternity, by which eternity and time interact. An eternity.
Shridhar.
Yes.
Is it possible to have the sense of immortality?
Of course.
We often forget about our death, our end. No? We somehow think that we live forever.
We, especially when we're young, we have the feeling we don't believe, really.
Yeah.
And we're ready to do all kinds of risky things because we can't believe that we're going to drop off the edge of the precipice. Mm. And Mother and Sri Aurobindo would like us to have that sense of immortality always, because that is our inner truth. Mm-hmm. Savitri says, conscious of immortality, I walk. They would like us all to walk conscious immortality.
It's interesting that the eye is used in darshan frequently by Sweet Mother and other people like Rana Maharishi and others to something that produces a change in the person receiving it?
Well, they send an influence, and we material physical beings, we perhaps are more receptive to that influence when we see it emanating from somebody. I can receive your thought more clearly if I see you, Brian, sitting there and saying these words, and that is entering my mind, and I think I'm not yet at the stage where I can just pick up your thought like that. So for us, this material, physical world, it's both a veil, a barrier, and a medium for communication. Would you read next, Marco?
Even a greater miracle was done. The mediating light linked the body's power, this leaf and dreaming of the tree and plant, the animal's vibrant sense, the thought of man, to the effulgence of a ray above, its skill endorsing matter's right thing, cut sentient passages of for the mind of flesh, and found a means for nations to know, offering its little squares and cubes of world as pure substitutes for reality, a mummified mnemonic alphabet. It had the unseen force to read her words. A buried consciousness arose in her, and now she dreams of herself human and awake.
Thank you. So the first miracle is the manifestation of a material universe full of form, some of them purely material, some of them living. There's this mediating light from above, which then, as the second miracle, links the powers of the body, for instance, the body's power of life and of sentience. It links that sleep and dreaming of the tree and the plant, sleeping consciousness that is there in the plant world, and the vibrant senses of the animal and thought in man. It links those to this effulgent ray above, that supreme light of consciousness. And that skill, magician skill, endorsing it, puts a stamp of approval on the right of matter to think. And so, able to allow and enable matter to think, cut sentient passages, the senses, the nerves, so that the mind of flesh, the consciousness of our bodies, our material brains, can perceive things, can learn to know. Blind nescience of the first life is allowed by that ray from above to know. That ray from above offers its little squares and cubes of words, like counters in a game, as a figured substitute for reality. We can say card, table, play. He says that's a mummified mnemonic alphabet. It's like a series of letters, mummified. It's dead, wrapped up, preserved, but it's an alphabet. A system of writing, and that in that way it helped the unseeing force, the blind force of nature, to read her work, read all that she has done, created in the material world, and that stimulates a buried consciousness in nature, rising up, so that at our level, our human level, nature dreams, she's still dreaming, but now she's dreaming us. She dreams that she's a human being, a mental being, all these mental beings, and that she's awake. Actually, she's only half awake. We are only half. That's the stage that her dream has reached.
What is the meaning of mnemonic?
Mnemonic. A mnemonic is a kind of little phrase or verse that you use to remind yourself of something. Vibgyor, these are the colors of the rainbow. Violet, indigo, blue. Or there's one for the months of the year. 30 days, September, April, May, and November. Those are the days that have, those are the months that have 30 days. All the rest have 31, except February alone, which has 20. So these are mnemonic. They are little phrases or formulas that help us to remember something. So what she's remembering is this buried consciousness waking up. Varadarajan, would you read this?
The buried consciousness arose in her, and now she deems herself human and awake. But all was still a mobile ignorance. Still, knowledge could not come and firmly grasp the huge dimension seen as the universe. The specialist of logic's hard machine, impose its rigid artifice on the soul and lay of the inventor intellect, it cut through into manageable bits that each might have its relation of thoughtful, then move it through slain body by its own. Here above exact and serviceable and false, it plays the space final view of things, a polished engine in the work of your God. None body form, his soul seemed dead. None had the inner to see truth whole, all glorified a glittering substitute.
Thank you. So there's the beginning of humanity. Nature dreams herself human and awake. But in fact, everything was still a mobile, shifting state of ignorance. Still, knowledge couldn't come and firmly grasp this huge invention, which is perceived as a universe. Instead, some other kind of consciousness comes in. A specialist of logic, hard machine, imposed its rigid artifice on the soul. We could say that maybe this is the analytic mind. Doesn't perceive and understand things directly, intuitively. There's some kind of working things out. It's a help, an aid, an assistant of the inventor intellect. It cuts truth or reality, it cuts it up into manageable bits so that each mind, each individual could have his ration of thought food, could absorb just as much as he needs to grow a bit. And the result of that is that a robot, a machine, a clever machine, exact and serviceable and false, displays the spirits. Final view. The spirit has its own way, knowing things. But now that it's functioning in this physical universe and using this new kind of consciousness, it has lost its own innate fine view of things and instead receives this basic mental apparatus. Polished engine did the work of a god, the divine mind. Fanny, will you read?
At line 156,
then new built truth. Yes, it cuts everything up and then it amalgamates it. That's what our mind does all the time, trying to put it together logically or illogically. But it's what we're taking in is little bits of information. We don't see things as they truly are, whole, with all their implications, all their powers. No? Our mind absorbs bits of information. It's interesting when Shobindo wrote that line, he didn't think of the use we would be making of that word today in computers, where everything is coded in bits. Yes, there's a kind of art, magical art in it.
What was this word from Shobindo?
The word bit. We know what a little bit, we have a little bit of cake or a little bit of this or that.
Yeah.
But it's specifically used in computer science.
Kilobytes.
for a unit of information. A tiny, tiny little unit.
B-I-T.
It's both bits and bytes. Smallest is bits and the bigger one is bytes. B-I-T.
The plural is byte?
Hmm?
Is a plural is byte?
No.
Bit and byte? No. We say kilobyte, megabyte, gigabyte.
Yes, we do when it's in the when the there are many of them. Okay. Yes, yeah. But each there's a bit. No, there's a positive bit or a negative bit, and that's a kind of code, a strange mnemonic alphabet. Yes, please, Fanny.
None have the inner look. Receive truth whole, all glorify the glittering so then from the secret heights a wave swept down, a brilliant chaos of rebelled light arose. It looked above and saw the dazzling speed peaks. It looked within and woke the sleeping god. Imagination called her shining squads that venture into undiscovered seas. where all the marvelous work done yet has shown, lifting her beautiful and miraculous head, she conspired.
You can't read? She conspired.
She conspired with inspiration, Sister Blue, to fill broad skies with glimmering nebula.
Thank you. This is imagination. What an important power for the mind. So, spiritual way of looking, the spirit's way of seeing, has been replaced by this more mechanical way of perceiving and conceiving. But another descent comes from the secret heights. A wave of consciousness swept down, a brilliant chaos. It's a disordered light, rebel light. It's not following any of these rules and bits and bytes. That consciousness looks above and sees the dazzling peak higher, the peaks of the higher levels of consciousness. It looks within and woke up the sleeping, the God sleeping there, the divine consciousness sleeping there. And through the action of this rebel-like imagination, called all her shining squads, her armies, her soldiers, that venture into undiscovered scenes. They're not basing themselves on any physical realities. Those undiscovered scenes where are hiding all marvels none has ever seen, has yet seen. That's what imagination does for us. It takes us into places and to possibilities that seem fantastic, unrealizable. But when imagination lifts up her beautiful and miraculous head, and she conspires with another great power, power of inspiration. That's her sister, and she, her sister also has many children, these shining squads. What they do together, imagination and inspiration, they fill thought's skies with glimmering nebulae. These wonderful clouds that are there in the universe from which stars are born, or in which stars are born. This is a whole process which he's describing. And the next step, Lupa?
A brighter air fringed the mystery altar's peace. Darkness blew yours with those open sound. In subtle knowledge from the last mystery. Kitchen passed from dim to radiant breath. That worked the power upon the gold world. Its subtle craft, it held the full world breeze, cherished the soul's childhood, and all frictions fed far richer in their sweet and natural sap, nourishing its immature divinity. Then the speckled or dry stream of reasons too, it heaped for them of innumerable facts, revealed there,
thank you. It's so suggestive, yeah, what he's saying. That imagination and inspiration, even they bring some error, but that error is full of light. In this way, that darkness, that not yet fully awake consciousness, becomes the nurse to wisdom's occult sun. Sun of wisdom, which is still hidden. Myth. In our ordinary speech, when we say something is a myth, we mean it's never existed and it doesn't exist and it never will. But that's not the real meaning of the word myth. Myth is a symbolic way of telling some deep truth in a way that's accessible to imagination and inspiration rather than to reason. And he says that that myth is suckling knowledge, like nursing a child, feeding it and helping it to grow with her lustrous milk, her milk that's full of light. So this infant which is the growing consciousness, passed from dim breasts, which are giving only a twilight knowledge, to radiant ones. This is the way in which the power, consciousness force, work on the growing world. It's subtle craft, it's skill, it's art. It holds back full-orbed blaze, full orb of the sun consciousness. It holds that back. It's cherishing, it's enjoying the childhood of the soul, for the soul has become fully illumined. And it goes on feeding the soul on fiction, on things which are not harsh reality, on fictions. And those fictions were far richer in their sap, their sweet and nectarous sap. It's delicious, nourishing the immature divinity. That sweet and nectarous sap is far richer and more nourishing than the staple food, the things that just keep you alive, no? Or dry straw. Through the winter we might have to feed the cattle on dry straw, which is really not very nourishing at all. No? The dry straw, he says, of reason tilth, that the reason has grown and harvested. Tilth. It's the produce of your field. The farmer tills the field and he grows something on it, and then he cuts it down, and if it's just dry straw, he gives it to the animals in the winter, no? So dry still. And he says, what our mind feeds to us is like that. It's just heaped up fodder, food for animals, dry straw, no? This dry straw of innumerable fact. That myth, those imaginations, those fictions are far more delicious and much more nourishing in helping the consciousness to grow. But we, these days, we thrive on that plebeian fare, that dry straw of innumerable facts.
What does it mean, plebeian?
Sorry?
What does it mean, plebeian?
Plebeian. It's what you give to the very ordinary people, the plebs. It's just the ordinary people, not the aristocrats, not the rich ones.
Servants.
Of course, they can be servants. Lower class people. Plebeian fare. So we would much prefer to eat delicious things, no?
Servants is wrong.
Just the ordinary.
Plebs is normal.
And the upper classes are the
plebeians.
The Romans, they had different classes. Yes. So the plebs were the lowest class. The lower.
I don't know in English, but in Spanish it's despective also.
It's what?
Despective. It's like.
Yes, you. Yeah, and I mean, they are unworthy.
You can use another word for the people that they are.
Please, Brian.
Thus stream down from the realm of early night, ethereal thinkings into matter's world, its gold-horned earth troot into earth's cave heart, its morning rays illumine our twilight's eyes, its young formations move the mind of earth to labor and to dream and new create, to feel beauty's touch. And know the world itself, the golden child began to think and see.
They're beautiful lines. This is what myth and imagination do for us. They enable these ethereal thinkings, these thinkings that belong to the highest substance, come down into the world of matter. Of course, I think the golden child, it is this child who's growing in the universe.
So this ethereal thinking is somewhere connected to the king idea?
What he links them to is these gold-horned herds, means the cows, the Vedic cows, the rays of light of the divine sun that have been hidden in the earth cave, no? The gold-horned herds. They trooped into Earth's cave heart. Actually, in the Vedic legends, they get hidden and locked up there in the subconscious. But here he's giving it another sense. That they come, we may not see them, but they are there in the heart of the material world. So that the morning rays of the, those ethereal thinkings light up our human twilight eyes and are seeing a mixture of light and darkness and ignorance. And they encourage us, those formations, those young formations of the early mind, move the mind of earth to make an effort, to dream, to be creative, to feel beauty's touch, and to have a new kind of knowledge of the world and of oneself. So in this way, through this pouring down the ray from above, the golden child who is immanent in the material world and who is gradually manifesting himself and growing up in it, he began to think and see before he was just living. There's a place where he refers to the golden child being alive and running, enjoying.
Shraddhavan, yes. We need to read through from here on.
We need to read through from here on. Okay, so one more section, two more sections. Let's see. Okay, Oivind, you would start this.
In those bright realms are mind's first forward steps, ignorant of all but eager to know them. Its curious, slow inquiry there begins. Ever its searching grasps and shapes the world, ever it hopes to find out greater things. Arming and golden beamed with sunrise fires, alert it lives upon invention's verge. Yet all it does is on an infinite scale, as if the cosmos were a nursery game. Mind, life, the play things, the titan's day. As one, it works who builds a Munich fort, miraculously stable for a while, made of the sands upon the bank of time, mid and pop out eternity's shoreless sea. A small key instrument the great puissance chose, an arduous, cast-time passionately pursues. To each, the ignorance is her difficult charge, where thought starts from an original prescient voice, void, and what she teaches, she herself must learn, arousing knowledge that sleepy air. For knowledge comes not to us as a guest, called into our chamber from the outer world, a friend and inmate of our secret self. It hid behind our mind's 12 feet, slowly breaks beneath the glows of life. The mighty demon lies unshaped within, to evoke, to give it form, its nature's task. All was a chaos of the truth and false. Mind sought amid deep mists of nations. It looked within itself, but saw not God. The immaterial interindividuality denied the truth that transient truths might have lived, and hid the deity it creed and guess, that the world of ignorance might grow slowly wise.
Thank you. Will you read, please, ma'am?
This was the environment made by a sovereign mind, looking from a being which into the night, in her first tantrums with inconscience, its alien dust battles her luminous eyes, her rapid hands must learn her cautious zeal. Only a slow advance the earth can hear, yet was her strength unlike the unseen earth's compelled to handle makeshift instruments, invented by the life force and the flesh. Earth all perceives through doubtful images, all she conceives in hazardous death has sight, small lives filled by touches of broken thought, incapable of the soul's direct image. She sees by spasm and soldiers, knowledge strike, makes truth the slave girl of her indecence, spelling nature's mystic unity, cuts into quantum and mass the moving all. She takes for measuring God her ignorance in her own domain, a quantum and a seal, that greater power with her half-risen sun, brought within limits, but possessed her feet, she knew by a privilege of thinking force, and claimed an infant sovereignty sight. In her eyes, however, darkly fringed was lit, the archangel's gaze, who knows inspired his act and shapes a world in its far-seeing way. In her own realm, she stumbles not ways, but in boundaries of subtle power, across which mind can step towards the sun, a candidate for a higher suzerainty, a passage to cut through from night to light, and search for an unblessed onset.
Thank you.
Heaven's trust to it are the established ancient ways, immutable laws man has no right to change, a sacred legacy from the great dead past, or the one road that God has made for life, firm shape of nature never to be changed, part of the huge routine of the universe, a smile from the preserver of the world, sent down of old this guardian mind. Earth, that all might stand in their thick, changeless type, and from their secular posture never move. One sees it circling, faithful to its task, tireless in an assigned tradition's round. In decayed and crumbling offices of time, it keeps close guard in front of customs wall, or in an ancient night's dim environs, it dozes on a little courtyard's stone. Bar every unfamiliar light as at a foe who would break up its home, a watchdog of the spirit's sense rail house against intruders from the invisible, nourished on scraps of life and matter's bones, in its kennel of objective certitude, and yet behind it stands a cosmic light. A measured greatness keeps its master plan, fathomless sameness rhythm. The tread of life. Stars, changeless orbit, thorough inert space. A million species follow one mute world. A huge inertness is the world's defense. Even in change is treasure, changeless. Into inertia, revolution sinks. In a new dress, the old resumes its role. The energy acts, the stable is its seal. On Shiva's breast is stayed the inner.
Thank you. Beautiful picture.
Wow.
the physical mind. And Mother made such an amusing drawing of it, we will see it. And she told Huta, I have to fight this fellow every day. The physical mind. But so useful. It has its role to play. So let's read about the next one, Turiya.
The fiery spirit king, next of the tree, the hunchback rider of the red wild bus, a rash intelligence leaped down violently from the red mystic flame that trims the rose, and with its dire edge eats a bee's heart. Thence from the burning vision of desire, a thousand shapes it wore, took numberless wings. The need of multitude and uncertainty creeps it forever to pursue the one on countless roads across the vast of time, whose circuits of unending difference. It burns all breaths with an ambiguous fire, a radiance gleaming on murky stream. It flamed towards heaven, and sunk and dug towards hell. It climbed to drag them through into the mire, and used for bloody ends its brilliant force, a huge chameleon, gold and blue and red, turning to black and gray and blue brown, hungry, it stared from the watered bough of life to snap at insect jaws. Its favorite food, the dingy sustenance of a sumptuous frame, nursing the splendid passion of its use.
Mm, thank you. Patty's asleep. Mano.
Patty is asleep.
The snake of flames, with a dark cloud for tail, followed by a dream growth of glittering gold, a lifted head with many thin, flickering crests. He blinked at knowledge with a smoky tongue, a whirlpool sucking in an empty air, based on vacancy, stupendous claims. In nothingness born, to nothingness return. Yet, all the time, unwittingly drawn towards the hidden something that is all. Ardent to find, incapable to retain, a brilliant instability was its mind. To err its inborn giant, its native cue. At once, when unreflecting dragon's throne, it taught all truth that flattered its own hopes. It cherished golden nothings born of wish. It snatched at the unreal of Covenant. In darkness, it discovered luminous shape. Into a shadow found half light, it saw huge images scrolled on fancy scale. Or it swept in circles through conjectures night and cold and imagination's camera, bright scenes of promise held by transient flares, fixed in life's air, feet of hurrying dreams, kept prints of passing forms and hooded flowers and flash images of half-seen verities.
Thank you.
An eager spring to seize and to possess, and wild by rhythm and unseen soul, was its first natural motion and its task. It climbed with life's force to achieve the impossible. It scorned the straight road and ran on wandering curves, and left what it had won for untried things. It saw unrest aims as instant fate, and chose the precipice for its leap to heaven. Adventure is system in the gamble of life. It took fortuitous gains as safe results. Error discouraged not its confident view. Ignorance of the deep law of being's ways and failure could not slow its fiery clutch. One chance may be warranted over it. Attempt, not victory, but the charm of life. An uncertain winner of uncertain stakes, instinct, and the life mind is silent. It ran its race and came in first or last. Yet, where it worked no small and vain, no noble, ignores the portion of infinity's strength and could create the high things its fancy wills. Passion called for calm intelligence most. In sight of impulse laid its keeping grasp on heaven's high thought had hidden in dazzling mist, cold glimmers that revealed a loving sun. It probed the void and found the treasure there. And half intuition purpled in its sense. It threw the lightning's fork and hit the unseen. It saw in the dark and vaguely blinked in the light. Ignorance was its field, the unknown its prize.
Mm, thank you. So this is the second poem, the life man, the writing man. A hunchback rider of the red wild bear. It's very rash and misleading, but Yobindo says its works were not small and insignificant. They were not useless. It has a great creative power.
Why he calls it hunchback? Yeah, I know.
I mean, it's not straight and upright and noble. It's deformed, I think we can say that. And that red wild ass just runs away with it, you know. So I think that's the place to stop today. Thanks to Sri Aurobindo.